Welcome back to Context and Clarity. I am Chuck.
I'm Karen.
I used to be a Democrat.
I used to be a Republican. But now we don't know what we are, but we do know this. As Abraham Lincoln reminds us, we are not enemies. We are friends.
We are.
It's been a while.
It's been quite a while. You're off probation now. So you can, since your last Johnson-laced episode.
I would just like to tell everybody for a second kind of why we haven't been doing episodes for over a year. It's really because we got to a point, well, I got to a point as someone who identifies as being on the right, where I just simply couldn't justify a lot of the things that were coming from the right. It just got to the point where I couldn't find anything to have common ground on, or a lot of things. And Chuck, you and I have said a lot of times that there's nothing new under the sun, right?
Yeah, well, Trump proved us wrong.
He did. He did. And we kind of reached a point where it was just so hard to watch the hurt and the angst and the drama in this country, and we were both just tired. We were tired of trying to teach people to think critically and to try to work to figure out why they believed what they believed and to figure out their roadmap. It just got exhausting.
What we found was confirmation bias just ran so deep in people.
It's really, really difficult.
That even what we tried to do is kind of stay somewhat apolitical and stick to facts
and history. But when people don't agree on facts, like we talked about in a previous episode, I believe it was the first episode where we switched the name to Context and Clarity, where we were talking about the importance of finding a common set of facts. Nobody was agreeing on the facts. I mean, look at the situation with the pandemic. You had people negating studies from places that were never considered political before.
Well, people just refuse. If the facts didn't fit their narrative, they just made up facts. And it's what we found and what we've really seen over the last 4 years is that you cannot debate someone who refuses to acknowledge what the facts are. I mean, there's plenty of times you can debate your opinion, but facts are facts and you don't get to change them. And when people will just ignore facts, I mean, we're going through this with the election, and this you know, goes to today. I am not above thinking elections could be stolen. You know, I think a couple of elections have been stolen. I think probably the Kennedy election was stolen. But it would be very difficult to do. And you can't just say it's been stolen. I mean, you have to come up with some proof. And all these people that are saying it's stolen, no one can come up with any proof whatsoever.
Right. Exactly.
That it's been stolen. I think we found, if I'm not wrong here, Karen, I think we found two people in this election
in Georgia
that voted fraudulently.
Right,
there were dead people who voted, and they voted for Trump.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, we've had so many people who are Republicans and independents that have, you know, that have a vested interest in maybe wanting to have conservative policy, that have looked at this over and over and over again and said, this is a good election. This is an election that, you know, I mean, no election is going to be perfect. Every election, especially when we're when we've got some evolving technology, is going to be fraught with some learning experiences. You know, there's going to be a little issue here and there, but overall, it was a fairly clean election. Definitely not enough to sway who won. And it's really interesting. I know that one of the arguments that the president made right after the election was, he said, "I just don't see how so many people could have won down ticket and I didn't win. It doesn't make sense. And it's proof that it was a fraudulent election." Well, probably a lot of people were like me and split ticket voted. I know in my family, you know, my kids, I let them make their decisions as to who they like politically. And I know
I do not.
I know that in my household, everybody voted split ticket. And, you know, and I think that a lot of people did that. And really, it was much more of a referendum on the president than it was about conservative or liberal policy. This was much more saying, you know, I think people made it clear through their votes that the majority of the country, of course, you're going to have people, you know, that are more left and people who are more right, but the majority of the country wants some moderation right now. They want to kind of reach some equilibrium and, you know, kind of fall into the middle at some point. And they want a little bit of moderation. I think that that's really what this election showed more than anything else. But I digress, because we have talked. The reason that we decided to do, we've been talking about bringing context back for a while. And we've been working on a pretty fun episode. And right as we were in the middle of crafting our episode, we had such a slow news day today that we just felt like it was necessary to do a little bit of a raw, unplanned version of Context and Clarity. Figure if we come back, we might come back spectacularly.
Right. We just would ramble for 30, 40 minutes, which, I mean, I could just say 4 or 5 words and put my phone down and come back 40 minutes later and pick you up in the middle of it. But we figured we could get an episode out of this. But I would miss all your jewels, all the jewels of knowledge that you have.
Exactly. And puns, possibly. You know, there are lots of things I could say that amuse myself.
Right. And don't forget the pun quota that we put in place. I mean, there were a lot of negotiations that we went through to get this back on track. I know you weren't happy with the size of your trailer, and
I believe you're the diva here, not me.
Yeah, that's right.
I think everyone knows who the diva is here. So I do have to say, before we go into the criticisms that we feel after today's lovely events, this was the day that our Capitol was stormed. So I think before we go into that, there is something I've been reflecting today on the things that I appreciate about President Trump. A lot of people say that I'm not a conservative because I don't support the president. You know, and I definitely have moderated on certain things, but I still consider myself a conservative in most regards, but I'm not a fan of the president. But I do have to give him this. I do think that Americans have learned a lot of history during his presidency. I mean, a lot of people learned about the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1930, which led us to the Depression because of the tariffs that the president instituted that caused us to have all kinds of government aid to farms because it affected so much of the middle of the country. The tariffs did. I know my grocery bill went up by $100 thanks to that. Thank you, President Trump, for that.
You have teenage kids. It's, you know.
It was the exact same food. That's the thing.
It's impossible to feed teenage kids. It's just
I'm such a nerd, though, that I actually ask people at the grocery stores, like the suppliers and stuff. Like, I actually ask about how supplier prices have changed and things like that, because I like to get that information. We've all learned so much more about the 1918 pandemic, the Spanish flu, as we've dealt with our own pandemic and the people who choose not to wear a mask in businesses. You know, people who say that they are pro-business that do not follow the rules that the business sets forth for them. We've been dealing with that. So we've learned a lot about the 1918 pandemic. And today we got to learn about 1814, which was the last time that our Capitol was taken over by people who wanted to overthrow the government. So,
well, he also taught us about the Great Depression, what it's like to live in the Great Depression.
you know, he's taught us history and some civil rights we've had to review, that we are all equal. There's a lot of things I could say, but I do have to thank this president for causing me to refresh myself on American history. So before we go into the negatives, I just wanted to point out those positives.
Well, those are all positive things.
If you could see my smile right now.
Wait, we learned history the hard way, Karen. We learned it the hard way.
Right. Well, if you could see my smile right now as I said that whole thing, it's the smile that a mother gives her child when they're out at the store and the kid does something wrong and the mother gives them that smile and she's like, we'll talk about it when we get home. And it's like a scary smile. That's the smile that was on my face as I told that whole story.
Do you know, since I just had three boys, you know what I learned to do to them in the store, in this off topic, but you know, right at the nape of your neck where your hairline begins, I would just give that a tug on their hair. Just a little tug, and that would always straighten them out. That would let them know that.
You compare your children to wolves a lot.
No, because when you raise three boys, it's really like raising a pack of wolves. It truly is. I've always said that. If you have three boys in the house, you have to come home every day and pee in the corner and remind them, mark your territory. And remind them that you are the alpha. I mean, it's...
I can't help but wonder if maybe it's more you that's the primal one and not the boys. But maybe someday we can have one of the boys on and they can confirm or deny that.
You have a girl to soften things around there.
Oh, my daughter is the one that's the toughest in the family. Are you kidding? She's... If anybody's working on the car, it's her. She's that, like... You know, she's that girl, that like hot girl that's out from under the car, you know, that a guy's like, whoa, that was a girl working under the car. So,
well, you have talked to Taylor, so you know what it's, imagine three of him coming home.
He's a very pleasant kid. So,
yeah, well, you didn't have to raise him, you know.
To be fair, he had to live with you, so that may have been part of the problem.
Okay, see, you were going to change. You promised me you were going to change. That was going to be...
I make no promises.
Personal criticism of me and my parenting and my overall basic lifestyle. But to get back on track, you know really what occurred to me today? There's so many things that
right, I thought right. of.
But today, we were literally maybe 20 people short of a State of the Union address. I mean, we had the Vice President in one place, Supreme Court Justice in one place, right, with the full Senate and the full House, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
They knew there were going to be problems.
Right.
Why did they have such a terrible security protocol? I mean, can you imagine what the security is for the State of the Union? That was basically a State of the Union level event.
Right.
And they were so totally unprepared, and they knew trouble was coming.
I think that there's...
And they were so unprepared.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot that comes out afterwards as to some behind the scenes things there. And I hope that that's not the case, but, you know, half the country voted for the president, almost half the country voted for the president after he had been in office for 4 years. I mean, so...
Yeah, that I'll never understand.
I don't either.
I mean, I don't understand living through that 4 years and saying, that's right, what I want more of.
Right. So it takes a level... You know, I think when people first voted for him, it was kind of like, well, we really don't like Hillary Clinton. We don't know what this might be like. So we're going to go ahead and just kind of vote and see, hope for the best. And... We, despite the fact that Melania told us to be best, unfortunately, we were not best. We, you know, it's been a rough few years.
What's troubling me the most, and tell me if you agree with this, to me, that was an act of sedition.
Oh,
I mean, it was a coup. It was an attempted coup. And what I did not see, what I just did not see, were people laying on the ground with, you know, zip ties on their hands, you know, holding them together. I saw no arrests. I mean, it literally, from the time it started, I could have left work and driven to Washington, D.C. and been there before the police and National Guard showed up. I mean, what was the holdup?
Right. I don't. I mean, I think we all know what could be part of it for sure. I think that they were told to probably hold back for a while. I do think one aspect that's different is this was a heavily armed group of people, and they were much more dangerous when it came to, you know, just turning into like mass violence with guns. It was a much more heightened situation in that, you know, a lot of the protests that turned into riots, a lot of protests did not devolve. Some did. And the ones that did, you know, there were a lot of dangerous situations, but you didn't have this massive group of heavily armed people. So I do think that it had to be a much, there was probably more caution taken. And I am not excusing any racism, which it's, you know, definitely a possibility, a likely possibility, or that the president told people to stand down. You know, I know that there was a lot of unsavory things that could be involved there, but I do think in just in an effort to look at all possibilities, this was a very heavily armed group of people, and that may have changed the strategy a little bit.
That's a good point to consider, that, you know, things could have turned ugly and there could have been 200 people dead. But you also have to wonder, you know, if people showed up to just a Black Lives Matter protest that heavily armed.
Right.
That's going to be
a comparison story. Yeah,
I mean, that's going to be a story.
I definitely
You can't
agree.
Be in the police's head to say, you know, to say what they were thinking. But it very well seems, again, and I said this during this a little off topic. I always blamed Obama. One of the things I felt like Obama was his biggest failure as president was when we had the financial crisis. No one went to jail. And it showed us clearly that there are two justice systems. There is a great divide. And there's a justice system for those who have money and those who don't. You know, clearly that was the case.
Right.
Because I know if I stole $1,000 from my bank, I would be in jail.
Right.
You know, now if I stole $10 million from a bank, I get a pretty hefty fine. That's what it seems like. So there's going to be comparisons between when you have a group of all, pretty much all white people showing up heavily armed and storming the Capitol. I mean, that's what they did. They stormed the Capitol.
Right. I just...
And...
Go ahead.
And one person was shot and killed. Apparently a lady got into... We don't know the full story on that.
The latest I heard was that she was climbing into the window of, you know, the place that they had to be the most secure. And unfortunately, like, you hear a lot of people on the right say during Black Lives Matter protests, they will talk a lot about compliance. I will use that same thing here. Unfortunately, when you do not comply with what the rules are, there are consequences. I hate to see anybody die, and I'm certainly not victim blaming, but I do have to say that if someone, you know, makes the decision that they do a cost benefit analysis in their head and they feel like what they're doing is more important than following the law, they're opening themselves up to the consequences of that action.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's going to be, I think the big story on this is going to be the lack of arrests and the lack of police action and the lack of security. But you also have to, at some point, tell me what your views are on invoking the 25th and just saying this guy's too dangerous. Because to me, presidents, we saw with Clinton when he had the Monica Lewinsky problem, he bombed an aspirin factory or, you know, a pharmaceutical factory in Africa. You know, and that kind of was the headlines of the news. For presidents get dangerous when they get cornered. You know, all people in power get dangerous when they get cornered. And I think I could say objectively, in my lifetime, Trump is the most unhinged president I've ever seen. I mean, he's shown it. His own staff are telling the news today that he has lost his mind. You know, I mean, they don't say it on, they won't give their names, but you hear, see, and you have right now a bunch of, he only has 14 days left, and you have a bunch of his officials who are talking about resigning over what happened. So somehow he's going to, my fear is that he tries to change the narrative. You know, and you've got tensions between South Korea and Iran, and nothing's going to create a headline like us dropping a bomb on Iran. And that's going to be problematic. And that's really my biggest fear. So to me, ideally, what you would do is just immediately go in and certify this election and impeach him and get him out. That way he can't pardon anyone. He can't do anything. But that, you know, that would take a few days. But the 25th, you can do in an hour. And it's the fact that we're talking about that people in Washington, that senators and senior people are actually talking about invoking the 25th tells you how deranged he's become, or how deranged he's at least acted. What's your view on that?
I think we should do it. And, you know, Jonah Goldberg, who is a well-known conservative columnist, he used to write for National Review. He is known for being a never-Trumper, but he's a well-known conservative. And he said, it's time, you know, we need to do the 25th. This man is not acting as president. In fact, I would be willing to say he's actually acting as an enemy to the country. By encouraging people to go to the Capitol today, that was an act of treason against our country, in my opinion.
See, I think it was an act of treason, too. And people at higher levels, again, senators, people like that, are using that word. And they don't use that word lightly.
No.
But there's no doubt that he was behind this, that he pushed this.
Right. And he's so slippery with his language. You know, he always will just sort of throw something out there and then pull it back. You know, kind of like it's really hard to get things to stick to him. But I actually think one of the reasons that he is trying so hard to not leave the White House is because New York has a lot of things waiting for him. After reading Cohen's book, Cohen knows a lot of stuff and he's done a lot of talking, and I don't think it's a situation that Donald Trump is looking forward to facing.
Well, here's a prediction, and you guys can hold me to this, or you can say, Chuck, you're a genius and we need to listen to you and kind of tolerate Karen. I believe within 6 months, the Southern District of New York will indict him on a number of things, and possibly even RICO things.
Right.
And I think that's what he's terrified of. I think he knows something, and that, you know, he's an insane narcissist to begin with.
Right. But he's acting scared. The unhinged level of just complete irresponsibility. And I would say that Trump has always wanted to appear presidential, you know, even though his version of that is different than most people's version of that. I do think that he likes pomp and circumstance. He likes for people to respect him. And the fact that he, he doesn't care right now. There's a fear, there's a primal fear driving him that he does not care how he appears. And he usually cares very much how he appears. I mean, look at when he had COVID and he was clearly not doing well at all, how he made that big show of walking up the steps and ripping off his mask and staring into the sunset. That was so ridiculous. But that actually gave me cold chills too, because it was like trying to get people to do something dangerous. I mean, in my opinion, a lot of people have died because of him. He's directly responsible for the deaths of a lot of Americans because of the way he treated the pandemic. So, you know, I have very, very strong feelings about all of this. And it grieves my heart that people that I know that are incredibly good people, people that I have always looked up to that are conservative, the mental gymnastics that it takes to justify this man's actions, you know, I'm like, this is the party of Lincoln, and look at what he has turned it into. Look at the mockery he's turned it into. It's just, it really grieves my heart and makes me incredibly sad.
Well, and even his loyalist, I mean, he's, today they said that, let's see, O'Brien, our national security advisor, acting. He's considering resigning. Matt Pottinger and his deputy chief of staff, Lydell, they're all considering resigning before. I mean, they have 10 days left.
Right. They want it to be known. I mean, at that point, it's just proving a point. If you resign with 10 days left, you're just making a point. Yeah.
Right. And we already have just a, and I honestly, I don't think there was a lot of, you know, I think there's a different narrative in that people, what people wanted, Biden was not the progressive devil, socialist devil that the right's making him out to be. You know, you take Biden, you take Romney, you take Obama.
Right.
You take Bob Dole.
Politically, they're
going to
be right around the same.
There's not much daylight between any of those guys, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing, you know, people shouldn't be afraid of Biden. Biden is not a socialist. He does not want to turn this country into a socialist country. Now, if you want to be afraid of a Biden, you should be afraid of Jill Biden, because if you go after her husband, she will jujitsu your ass. So, you know.
That's who they needed at the protest today.
Right.
And I'll tell you, this is where we talked about this a little bit. You admired John McCain quite a bit.
I did, yeah. I was missing him so bad.
I was too, because I believe that if you would have had him and
Bernie Sanders.
Sanders. Get out into the hallway as those protesters were coming
in. They would have been like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah, both of them, like, with their hands and just, yeah.
Yeah, McCain wasn't afraid of anything.
No. And Bernie would just be like, what the hell is wrong with you people? Just like this whole grumpy, get off my damn lawn type thing.
Get off me. Yeah, he doesn't have the good sense to be afraid of anyone. You know, McCain has courage and Bernie has poor judgment.
So between the two of them.
But between the two of them, that makes them very dangerous people.
All these young guys all these young people that are like pushing up the furniture. They had to put like furniture against the doors. It's just a complete insanity. But, you know, they're all pushing the furniture, and you can just picture like John and Bernie being out there just, you fools and imbeciles, what the hell are you doing? And, you know, just...
Get out of here.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you again. Get out of here.
Right.
And you made a point that made me laugh today. About
Lindsey Graham.
Oh, no. The former Speaker of the House.
Oh, right. Yeah. You know, Paul Ryan was sitting home in his little, you know, den in Wisconsin, and
he's in the recliner.
He's calling
Mitch
McConnell, and he's like, so Mitch, how's it going? You know, I'm not there.
Well,
check that.
It's like, hey, Mitch, I'm watching this on C-SPAN, and I see you under the desk there, so you might want to creep a little further under there.
Right. Paul Ryan is celebrating the fact he got out of there before this complete disaster.
Yeah. And Mitch pulling himself up. I can all picture Mitch pulling himself up. Like that one dead hand.
I know. That was crazy. The zombie hand. And then he's like, there's nothing to see here. Like, no, it's just my reptilian self molting. That's all. It's just like, pay no attention behind the curtain.
He reminded me, I'm getting off topic. But again, he reminded me of the Black Knight in Monty Python.
Right. You know? That's it's Trump, like, man.
Your hands, but it's not even your hand anymore. It's spread up to your elbow. I mean, everything's black. It's like you got a prosthetic, but they made it for somebody else. It's a completely wrong color. So
it's just like the inside. What's on the inside is coming like on the outside, Mitch. But it, you know, I drafted a post. I've been trying to avoid social media a lot this year because it's just too disheartening, and I want to like people. But I did draft a post today because, and I believe it's really good. First of all, if anyone has listened to me for very long, and you, I guess we both do the podcast, but if anyone has listened very long, they know that I am not a fan of chickens. I like to eat chicken. I do not like to be around chickens. They are not my favorite creature. However, you know, I had an analogy today regarding chickens. It was like the right has been spreading out chicken feed all along the country. You know, if a person goes around their property and they spread chicken feed around their property and they build chicken coops, guess what? The hens are going to come roost and you're going to have chicken poop all over, right? The Mitch McConnell today, when he was like, guys, you know, really, there's nothing to see here, after he's been kind of flirting with conspiracy theories and stuff, him doing that today just reminded me of someone who like invited all the chickens and then is like, why is there chicken shit everywhere? You know, like that's what it was like. You know, it was just like, why are there people storming the Capitol after we have been fear mongering for 4 years? These people believe what you tell them. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The politicians know. They know that the stuff they say on the news and in the media is just, it's selling. It's marketing. Politics is marketing. And that's all they're doing. And when they're working, oftentimes they're working together. They're friends. They're hanging out. They're going to dinner. Well, you and your aunt or your cousin or whatever are sitting at the table. Well, you really shouldn't be this year because we shouldn't be in groups, but hating each other. But our politicians, they don't hate each other. They're just playing politics. This is just political theater. And they have caused our country, some of the best people, to be so filled with hatred and so filled with just this. I mean, they believe it. They believe that they are saving the country today. They believe that they did something, you know, just revolutionary today. And it grieves my heart. They did. They did. I, with that one wolf skin or bison skin or whatever, like Braveheart dude that was, you know, all up in everybody's face today, I feel like that he had kind of some Russian garb. I sometimes wonder whenever a protest starts out peacefully and devolves, if Vladimir hadn't like deployed some people in to a situation and like, let us turn this situation into, you know, whatever, however Vladimir talks. But, you know, I kind of feel like sometimes it's just a big, you know, Russian joke on us. It's kind of crazy. I don't know. This has just been such a sad day. It really has. It's been a sad day, a shocking day. You know, I talk a lot about politics being like a car. You know, what do I always say about the political car, Chuck?
It's like, you cannot rev the engines too much in a car or they're just going to blow.
Well, that's not, do you not listen to me? Because that's not the analogy I use.
I know, but I like that analogy.
I think you just want to torture me. That's what I think.
No, I think I like when you tell the whole analogy because you do it so
I've
well.
I've been talking so much
steal
this time.
Your thunder.
But I always say that conservatives are like a braking system in a car, and the left is like an engine. You know, they want to plunge forward. They want to just rev and move forward and move forward and move forward. And the conservatives are like the braking system that's like, hold on, let's look at history here. Should we really do this? Let's slow down. And utilizing both the forward movement and the stop actually kind of moves us forward slowly and haltingly, but it moves us forward. That's how the oppositional government works. And right now, the right stopped being a braking system. They stopped with any kind of accountability, with any kind of self-reflection. And now we have two engines, two cars with revving engines, which means we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to, each one is trying to rev its engine louder. And all that's going to do is just run down the battery of the car. You know, it's just going to keep, it's going to cause both cars to be a piece of junk and nothing to move forward. We need,
or we
both
let go of the brakes and they smash into each other.
Right. There's that.
Hopefully we get two new cars. Right. That would be
a lot better
scenario.
Yeah. You know, I don't consider myself a centrist. I think that centrists tend to be sometimes compromise in areas that I wouldn't want to see compromise, but I do believe that I'm kind of center right. And you would say that you're more center left, probably a little bit more than center, but you're kind of center left now because the left has moved so far left, correct? Would you say that about yourself?
I'm a little bit, I would not say I'm a progressive and I would not say I'm a liberal. I'm somewhere between the two.
Right. I kind of feel like we need to be a radical center, you know, like from the center, left center to the right center, all of us, we all need to just kind of be, we need to be like, you know what? We're going to stop listening to this far group, and we're just going to stop listening to this far group, and we're going to be like the radical center, and let's all be, you know, let's get along. You guys can fight. You guys can keep fighting, but we're going to be civil. We're going to treat each other with dignity, and we're going to get along. And maybe that would change things. And another thought that I had is, you know, if you go so far left and you go so far right, you end up in a circle and you're both in the same place. You know, when everybody talks about Antifa and how dangerous Antifa is, which in and of itself, that we could do a whole episode and we may on that at some point in time. When people talk about that, there's no daylight between an anarchist who causes a riot and someone who's wanting to overthrow government institutions. I mean, they end up being in the same place. Their goals end up being the same.
You're from Oklahoma, essentially, right?
Right.
And who's more dangerous, Antifa or Timothy McVeigh?
Right. Today, as an Oklahoman, today especially, it hurt to see, because that's the mentality that one of my friends lost her father in the Alpha P Mura building bombing. And I know that there's conspiracies about that, but, you know, domestic terrorism a lot of quote-unquote patriot groups are now considered domestic terrorism. And the FBI was there tonight when the FBI has not been at a lot of the Black Lives Matter situations because of the giant plots, the underground plots that we've had, like the plot to kill the Michigan governor. You know, it's just...
Right. That didn't stem from the left.
No.
And there is no more... What's happened is... With this house, with this new house, there's a lot of progressives and there's a lot of progressive ideas being thrown around that, you know, obviously were not going to come to fruition with Mitch McConnell in the Senate. But the right, to me, has lost its entire ideology, because what they became was Trumpsters, and Trump has no political ideology.
Right.
They just became followers of whatever he said.
Right.
And he had no conservative ideology. He had no right ideology.
Right. There was just right for him.
You know?
That's it.
Yeah, he just, I think he did, he didn't give much thought. I mean, he's not a guy, clearly, he's not a guy who's prone to a lot of self-reflection.
And some decent things may have happened accidentally. You know, I mean, I really like some of the criminal justice reform that happened. That wasn't really him. That was Kushner and a lot of bipartisan work with that. But I mean, you know, there have been some things that I think are positive, but the rhetoric and the what has happened in society and the institutional the way that our institutions have just been degraded. It's
well, that's the most dangerous part.
The damage is just huge.
He has caused us, because he is authoritarian by nature, and he, you know, only I can save this. And I had to laugh that when he was saying all the problems America had, and really we needed him when he was running for re-election, and I thought, that's kind of a strange message to run on when you have been in charge for 3.5 years, you know, to say we are so
right,
we're such a dystopian hellscape that you need me to rescue
right.
you.
Right, you're the one who's been in charge of it.
But right. His actions have always really just been, what is the most authoritarian thing to do? What is going to make me look the strongest?
Right. And he looks up to authoritarian figures, and it's just...
My point about Biden is I think that, you know, so obviously a lot of people who identify as Republicans, and the Republicans, I think, have lost so many people who now identify as independents. And I don't think Democrats have made huge gains, but I think they are looking at things and thinking, you know, these guys are not really what I want. He's just, to me, single-handedly destroyed a party. I think that it's going to take, for better or for worse, Gingrich kind of defined the Republican Party. And McConnell tried to, but he lost control. And he became basically just a Trumpster.
It started really, really devolving with Newt Gingrich. And Newt Gingrich is the framer of a lot of Trump
speech.
Yeah,
the way that he talks and the way that he...
Really...
But ideologically, they are so different. Now, the thing that Trump did was he put a lot of very conservative judges in the courts, and especially in the appeals court and obviously on the Supreme Court. But he really did very little, you know, in the big picture of things. And he's in Twitter jail right now. Did you know that? They suspended his account for 12 hours. They froze his account. He can't tweet for 12 hours. So that's where I think, Christ, and next, we're liable to bomb Canada in the next 12. This guy's got nothing to do.
Yeah.
Hopefully nobody tells him that his Twitter account's frozen, and you know, it's one of those things where he thinks he's sending out tweets that nobody's getting.
Well, that's what they did with his father. I've been reading. I'm so into the White House in palace intrigue because I'm really interested in what has been going on inside the White House, relationship wise, and things like that. Because this has just been so chaotic and crazy, and so I've been reading a lot of the White House insider books. Like I read Melania and Me about Melania's best friend, and because I wanted to know more about her. And you know, I've read Cohen's book, and I've read just a lot of the insider books. And one of the books I read was the one written by, I believe, his cousin Mary.
Yeah.
Isn't that or is it his sister? I can't remember.
I think it's
It was. Yeah, his niece. And it was talking about, like, with his father, Fred, when his father got dementia, he thought he was still working. They kept his office looking like it was still working. And, you know, they would give him papers to sign so that he had the illusion that he was working every day. And I, you know, sometimes I wonder if that's not, if we don't have like a shadow government trying to do that. But I think that Trump is just coherent enough to be truly dangerous. And we're seeing it today. All of it is coming to fruition. I mean, this is tragic. And one of the things that grieves my heart more than anything is that the word patriot is equal to the word terrorist right now. And that breaks my heart.
They use the term patriot. You know, I would never use the word
right.
patriot.
Right. But that's what, you know, that's the term that's being used by these different groups. And, you know, the fact that it's equal to terrorism is just, it's just horrifying. You know, people talk about extremist, Muslim extremist terrorism and all that. Well, here's the thing. Most of the mass shootings in the last few years, I mean, we haven't had any Middle Eastern terrorist attacks. It's all been far right. And you can say lone gunman, lone gunman, and lone gunman. Well, at what point do you start connecting all the dots that there's an, just like with, you know, extremists of any other faith or anything like that, you know, the right will say, at what point do you just call it what it is? You know, at what point do you not say that this is part of a system that needs to be destroyed? I think that the same could be said for this. You know, that at what point do you connect the dots and say, this is dangerous and needs to be completely stomped out?
And I won't, we could spend a whole show on the hypocrisy of the left, but the mentality of this group, and they literally hung from the Capitol and one of the sides from the Capitol, a Trump flag.
Right. Think about that.
A Trump flag. Okay.
There was also a Confederate flag inside.
Think about, these are the people who just go completely insane when a football player kneels.
Right.
But breaking out the windows of the Capitol building is okay. Taking down the American flag and putting
and
up a Trump flag.
A Trump flag. Is okay. I just, and they're the ones that say respect our flag. And that leads me to another thought. A friend of mine who is Black posted something that said that, you know, every time she sees someone wear a shirt with an American flag on it, that she feels scared of that person. When did we get here? When did we get to the point where what makes America so cool is that it's not based on an ethnicity. Every other country, when they talk about patriotism, it has to do with their ethnicity. In America, what we're supposed to be patriotic about is that many are one. It's the e pluribus unum. It's that out of many, we are one. That's where our American pride should come from. And it's not. And it is... disturbing to me, and it grieves my heart. And I would plead, if there's any conservatives or Republicans that still listen to this show and are willing to listen to the show, really think about this. Really think about, like, putting the shoe on the other foot. And, like, if this was on the other side, would we be okay with this? You wouldn't. You wouldn't. And I plead with you to really think, because we need to have healthy opposition in our government. We need to have a healthy Republican Party and a healthy Democratic Party. We need the debate. We need the discussion. We need to refine one another. But this is just destroying our nation. It's turning us into the separate states, not the United States. And we have to be united. It has to stop. It has to stop. We have to start listening to
each
other.
Well, I don't see, and I'm not nearly as optimistic as you are. I don't think it's going to stop. I sat through 8 years of Obama, and, you know, with the whole birther thing, and you know, I come from a place in Cincinnati, the west side of Cincinnati, and there was so much underlying racism in everything said about Obama. So there was 8 years of that, and I thought, you know, maybe that this will slow that down. Well, we just really, it just really put things on steroids. If his whole intent from the very beginning was to divide. I mean, that was his whole intent.
Was us versus them, right? Us versus them. And yeah, we're no longer the U.S. We're us versus
right.
them.
And that was, he's never hidden that. And that was always kind of the amazing thing to me about Trump. Was Trump never, he didn't fool anybody. He didn't fool anyone. He never pretended to be anything other than he was.
Anything other than he is.
I mean, he told you what he was.
And that's what makes this so
sad. When people tell you what they are, you need to listen.
Believe
them. And I don't know. We had a conversation about this earlier when we were talking. The people that showed up today, do you think that they're people who were just that easily fooled? Because here's my theory. I think you have a group of people who are perpetually just mad, just very angry at what's going on in the country, and they want to blame somebody. And Trump's really good at finding people to blame, right? It's everybody else but us, you know? It's everybody else but us. And there's no, you can't really deny that that's directed toward white men in America. You know, it's he does this thing where he tries to spin up white men in America. And
right.
I think, you know, if you're a regular guy in America, you already have a sense in the back of your mind that something's wrong with the country. But, you know, he pointed fingers. It was Mexicans. It was, you know, Muslims. It was whatever. You know, I have a theory that I don't think these people are so dumb as to be tricked. I mean, they have to know he's a grifter. Maybe they are true believers. I think you tend to believe more that they're true believers. I think they're just angry and following something. I think they're just, you know, we talked about Antifa and they have no real ideology either. But I think they're just, these people are just angry and they're just acting out. He gives them a channel to let that anger out.
I think I have a friend who hopefully might be joining the show soon. We were hoping that she would join beforehand. Shout out to you. You know who you are. And we hope that you will get to be on here with us soon. But a friend of ours, actually, that is a journalist, she gets very frustrated and I think she would say that she identifies on the left a whole lot more, but she gets very frustrated with the left media because she believes that by demonizing certain white culture, you know, white men and stuff, that it's created a reactionary type movement from white men, you know, from a certain subculture that feels like they are, you know, being persecuted or treated unfairly. And I think there's a little bit of truth to that. I mean, I do think that you can't keep telling someone they're the enemy when they're just sitting there, you know, doing their own thing. And they're like, I'm not the enemy. Like, why do you keep calling me the enemy? I do think that every action has a reaction. And we're seeing some of that in every way. You know, I really wish that we would tamp down inflammatory rhetoric in general. I think that if you're wanting to teach someone about white privilege and you're wanting to talk about the power structure in this country and how it needs to be changed, instead of just blasting people out and calling them racists and doing that, that it would be much more effective to just educate, to explain, and it's no one's job to educate, but the thing is, at what point, how else are we going to learn what we need to change? But no one wants to hear how horrible they are. And if they hear it long enough, they're going to rise up against it. It's not okay. It's never been okay. But I think that every action has a reaction. And, you know, and that now, because everybody is being so reactionary, we see a lot of very quick reactionary legislation to things that isn't thought through and isn't, you know, tested through history and things like that. And the pendulum just keeps swinging far left, far right, far left, far right.
Well,
it's making me dizzy and crazy. And
as what some people would call an old white man, what gets a little bit frustrating to me is the power structure in this country is made up of white men. I mean, that's undeniable.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's privilege there. It definitely exists. It doesn't matter how poor you are or where I grew up in low income housing too. I still had privilege that, you know, my neighbor who was of color did not
right.
have.
And you so, can, you can easily agree to that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
However, right. when you, you know, and I kind of picture it in my head as a pyramid, this pyramid of power. And although it's, you know, way bigger at the top than at the bottom, but as a white man, do I know that things are easier for me because I'm white? Absolutely. I know that this is something that is terrible, but I know that I'm probably not going to get pulled over randomly by a cop if they see me. You know, they're just going to look at me and I'm basically invisible to them, right? But at the same time, while the power structure is made up of white males, most of us white males are not in that power structure. We're pushed right. out too. We're not pushed out as far as other people, but we're pushed out right. too. And
mm-hmm.
I'm just, you know, I would like people to see that this is something we're all in together. And if we keep dividing each other by, I don't know, I'm one rung lower.
Then nobody has any power. Right. If we keep, yeah, but I mean, society's always been that way.
If we keep fractionalizing, and yeah, we have always been that way, but we keep talking about how we're going to be able to change things. We're not going to change things as long as we don't look at the real power structure and, by fighting with each other, that distracts us.
And hold it accountable. That's what we need to do, is hold the power structure accountable and allow everyone to be a shareholder in this country. And that's what we're not doing. You know, you and I have talked a lot about regulations. And I know, being a conservative, there was a time when I was very, very for, you know, getting rid of all regulations. But, you know, we need banking regulations. We need to make some major... There needs to be some major reform in this country. And, you know, we have to come to the table and have real conversations instead of, well, what about you? Look at what you did. Well, what about you? Right. Look at what you did. That it doesn't do anyone any good at all. And I would just really like to see us move forward. You know, it's going to be at a slow pace, but, and you know.
Well, we're not going to do anything until we start getting back to having conversations that are of substance that aren't about political identity, that aren't about victimhood, that aren't about anything but policy and what is good for, what is good for you and what is good for me. And that's where we'll get when we get back to having those conversations. And I think that, you know how much Chomsky I read. I think that just what we have in conversations is basically dictated, which, you know, brings me to a point that, you know, CNN, Fox, and MSNBC and the cable channels are just beside themselves today, you know, because they're thinking, wow, the golden goose is about to walk out of Washington. What are we going to do? Because, you know, how Biden's just going to be boring. You know, he's just going to be boring. He's not going to be tweeting crazy stuff. He's not going to be doing crazy stuff. So they're not going to have Trump every night. They're not going to have Trump anymore. And this last thing, if it is, in fact, let's just pray it is the last thing. There's too many people at major networks right now thinking, thank God he did something really crazy. Because.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what? I think that there's been so much demonization of journalists that I think the media is at fault, but you know what? The media is at fault in some areas, but we're the ones dictating what the media gives us. You know, we're the ones creating the market and demanding what this market is.
Sure, but so, when your capital is under attack, you're going to turn on whatever news channel you turn on. And that's going to get eyeballs, and they know that. You know, I'm sure ads are costlier tonight than they were last night.
Right.
That's kind of a thought I had today, is that they're trying to get as much mileage as they can out of out of Trump these last 2 weeks because Biden's just going to be boring. They're going to have to, you know, unless he makes Hunter Biden chief of staff. Now that will get interesting.
I'm not going to have much to say. Right. I don't know. Well, I know that this episode has been long and rambling and not steeped in facts and research because we just wanted to kind of ramble a little bit today and talk about what's on our minds because it was just so, it was kind of monumental what happened today and it let's learn from it, you know, let's learn.
Yeah,
from
it's been 200 years since someone stormed our Capitol. So, you know, it is kind of a significant event.
We just need to move forward.
Yes, we do.
And we're all tired. We've all, you know, we know what it's like now to not be connected with the world around us, to not be connected with our neighbors and our friends. And I think most of us are tired of it. And we want to be connected with people again. And you know what? We have a real opportunity after, you know, the vaccinations. That's another thing we could go on a whole episode about. I ain't put that in my body yet. You took every drug known to man back in the 70s, but cool, whatever.
You eat a Taco Bell.
But, you know,
that's my argument. If you've ever eaten a Taco Bell, you can't say. And if it really, if they're going to chip anybody, you really need to be chipped. You know, it's not going to hurt you to be chipped.
The government doesn't care about you and what you're doing. I mean,
no, I mean you personally.
They don't care. You're not that important.
Just so you can look down into your right arm and say, you know, Siri or whoever, you know, get me to Target, please. And, or, you know, you can get that a buzzing vibration when you're getting too close to those yellow things.
When
yeah,
I'm driving,
in the banks.
That's a legit thing. I probably.
If you get one of those chips, think how easy. I mean, just.
I definitely fit the stereotypical bad woman driver.
Or where your phone's at, you know, like you could walk around and think a buzz the closer you get to your phone, like you're getting warmer. That would be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you could probably benefit from it as well, actually. But overall, we promise as we move forward that we will have more history and we will have more facts.
More facts, less opinion.
For tonight, more facts.
Well,
less opinion.
You'll have facts. I'll still have the opinions.
That's right. But today we're just going to return and ramble, and that's what we're going to do. So it's really great to talk to you again tonight and to kind of talk politics. It's been so disheartening to do it. Hopefully, in the future, we'll be able to have some productive conversations and some productive government. And I think, Chuck, that's all that we have to say.
That is all we have to say about that.
About that. That's right. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.